there are overwhelming, turbulent times, but that also means there is major potential to fill the cracks with new ideas and to transform these destructive systems. There are specific root causes for problems and holistic solutions everywhere. There is room for prosperity, there is room for regeneration and a shift in values. Another reality is possible, and that's what we're exploring here today. Welcome to Sage Talking.
My name is Eric Turner. I come from the Italian-speaking part of Switzerland, Ticino, from the very south. I have a background in chemical and process engineering, so I studied both in the French and in the German part. And I currently live in Baden, in the German-speaking part of Switzerland, and I work for a company called Neustark. And Neustark is an ETH spin-off founded in 2019, which works in the carbon removal space. So yeah, 2018 was about to get into the workforce, as they say. I started to ask myself really what should I do with my time, with my energies, what should be the priorities? And during that time, I was doing a civil service in the Materials Research Institute, IMPA, on solar cells, which was very interesting. And then, like I was planning since a while, I started my career in pharma industry, like most of chemical engineers. And doing is the safe choice in a way. However, in parallel, I started working in my free time with this organization, Yes Europe, and really discovered a wealth of community of peers that were really interested and engaged about energy and the energy transition. And that was really inspired me. And after a couple of years working in pharma, I reached a point where I told myself, I cannot do this anymore. I have to work for sustainability in some shape or form. And that's how eventually I came to Neustark, where today I can now work as an engineer. I started as a project manager, and now I'm focusing more on quality. And it's really a way for me to contribute, if you will, to this big challenge. And what we are trying to do at the end of the day, you could really say, is transform business and make it a force for good, which is this huge challenge, right? Because we always talk about big pharma, for example, or the cement producers who are the bad guys in a sense. And I think that is also part of the challenge, which I find so interesting. How can we help them transition? Because in a way, they're also interested to be there in the long game. Of course, they're also part of the problem. But how can we be there to support them?
Yeah, definitely. The first thing I thought when you were talking about pharma, I was like,
exactly.
this feeling you get. But maybe you could start by speaking a bit about what Neustark does and also what your exact tasks are there.
Sure. Neustark is a carbon dioxide removal scale up based in Bern, and what we do is we offer CDR services to the industry. This means that if a big corporation is interested in compensating or rather removing part of their portfolio, they can come to us and say, hey, Neustark, we would be interested in buying some of your certificates. And we offer this service of permanent removal through our technology. This technology is a permanent removal technology because what we do at the end of the day is we bring CO2 back into recycled concrete. Now, it's important to know, to realize that, particularly in Switzerland, but throughout Europe, concrete can be recycled, removed, and it's also a growing industry because there is more and more knowledge growing around this. And one reason for this is that, right, we have less primal resources. We can dig less into the ground to build buildings. And so cities and anyone who is interested in building something is forced to look more at reutilizing resources, right? So that is the circular economy aspect of the thing. And that is already in place, and that is what we tap into. So what we do now is that we go to these concrete and to these concrete recyclers, and we sell them equipment so that they can inject CO2 into their recycled concrete. And why should they be doing this? How is this possible? So this is gonna be a bit technical, so let me try to simplify it a bit. But the recycled concrete can react with the CO2 and form calcium carbonate. So a stable form of CO2, the most stable form of CO2 there is in this world. And this is the permanent aspect of the equation. And why they should do this? Well, the reason is very simple, right? Like I was saying, these businesses are interested in decarbonizing their businesses in the first place. And so with this technology, they are able to take some biogenic emissions and put it back into the recycled concrete, so it becomes a sink, a permanent sink, where we can take up some CO2. Of course, this is negligible if we confront it to everything that we're emitting, but it can be part of the emissions.
Mm-hmm. So because on the website it said demolished concrete is one of the world's largest waste streams, Neustadt turns this waste stream into a carbon sink. And then there was actually a really nice like overview of how it's done, a good graphic, which is nice to kind of have a picture in your mind of how it goes. So I wanted to know, is it actually that, like, let's say demolished old concrete, if buildings are ripped down, that is used, and also CO2 pulled directly from the air, both of that?
Right. So what we do is, for the CO2 part, we partner with biogas providers or wastewater treatment facilities, right? So so these industries, if you will, they will be already be producing biogas in some shape or form and have a waste stream of CO2. That is why we call it a biogenic CO2 source. This comes from biomass that has fermented and is producing this biogas and methane. And then we take the CO2 part of it. And then this is the CO2 that we bring then to the concrete recycler.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about what you think, because obviously carbon credits and carbon offsets are something that are being used very widely, and some more, well, reliable than others. And I want to know about your opinion on the importance of using technology alongside, you know, these practices that are regenerative, actual with the earth on the ground, grassroots practices, because I find often, you know, companies and also like politics very widely use these tech solutions as a kind of a cop out to not have to actually change their practices, maybe the economy, the dynamics of how we're living and interacting with the planet, mm-hmm. but then using that as saying, you know, we're doing our same old things, but we're buying carbon credits and carbon offsets or investing in certain projects, but still not changing anything about how we actually function as a company. So what's your opinion on that, or your experience with that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very important question, the one that you're asking. And I wish more people, I mean, I guess more and more people have started asking it since last year, since we had this big, big scandal, right? And it's really good that the industry is undergoing this scrutiny. Like you're saying, it has been, and it's used very much as a tool to delay real change. How I interpret it, however, is these politicians, these decision makers, don't really know what regenerative practices are. And so they don't have many options at hand, really. What I would argue is these certificates are the only option that they see at the moment that are really viable. We often right, what is still very trendy concept is the option of scale, which is arguably also still very important, right? Because we're dealing with a massive problem here and we need solutions in a way that do scale to some degree, to some extent. And so when we're talking about technology, but also regenerative practices, at the end of the day, it's a tool, right? Also, if you think back in the days when the Neanderthals starting using fire, fire was a tool for them to start cooking. And so also today, we are faced with the choice of what tools we use and what benefit these tools bring us. And we are a creature of habit. And so right, we have to break away from this inertia, this system that has locked us in and that is creating all these unwanted consequences. But I think it's information inequality in a way is also important to be aware of, that it's probably, I would guess that, I don't know, the president of Switzerland or whoever doesn't actually know that regenerative practices are an option, or wouldn't be able to describe how they work. I'm not sure I would.
I think that's an important point, and I often think the same thing. You know, how are, let's say, people in CEOs of bigger companies or politicians, how are they going to decide, you know, these, they're not going to decide the practices, you know, to practice with Earth, to engage in regeneration and change these structures actually to realign our lives with nature's rhythms, just because they don't know them. You know, how are you going to decide for something and lean towards something you don't know? So I definitely agree with you that I think something like carbon credits and carbon offsets, you know, it's something they can understand. It's an option that is presented, so that they would choose that first before something unknown that also seems very far, you know, from economic practices. And because I think everything that is involved also in the economy is something for them easier to grasp. And as well, I thought your point was interesting about the tools, you know, just choosing the tools we have. One of the things I think we're going to be also talking about in this conversation is technology. And I actually want to start with a definition of technology that is out there, because for me also, you know, a few months ago and over the last few years, I've developed more this in being very unsure about, you know, technology, about technology-based solutions in the climate crisis, in biodiversity, in all these different crises we have. And I thought about it, and I dove deeper into it, because I was very unsure and maybe even a bit afraid of something that I didn't know enough about, which I still don't know enough about. So just this definition of that technology is the application of scientific knowledge to the practical aims of human life, or to the change and manipulation of the human environment. So the application of scientific knowledge for practical purposes, especially how we use it maybe in industry. So for me, it was really important also to just remind myself of that it can be an array of applications and tools, technology that is apart from what we most associated with, which is mostly probably smartphones and laptops. If we hear the word technology or AI, you know, we associate it, or a lot of us who are not in the field of technology associated with these devices. So really, I thought your point was interesting to say, you know, we are in a point in time where, you know, we can always pick and choose our tools, but now the tools that we choose, no matter what they are, will possibly, you know, decide history in a way, in many points, depending also on which scales. So I want to talk to you on this note a bit about complexity. First, which was a topic you were also pointing at, something that is of interest to you, because I think the carbon offsets and sometimes also tech-based solutions are something that does not take into account the complexity of Earth, of the world, of, you know, how humans and non-human beings on this planet function and interact with each other, this interconnectedness and relationality, systems thinking, etc. So what do you think are maybe some dangers that you're seeing here in overlooking complexity, or trying to break down complexity to just say, okay, you know, we have a big problem here and we're offering you one solution, you know, take that solution and we'll all be fine, like we often also see in politics?
Thank you for this question. I think it's also right such an interesting and important point, and I want to take a couple of examples just to have a reference. And one thing I like to pick on is solar geoengineering, right? Also very, very controversial, right? Putting sulfur up in the atmosphere, and that, right, that has to be a bad thing. How could we conceivably tell to ourselves, hey, we have to do our thing? And even, right, in a sense, you could say, hey, but actually this technology, technology, it's really a bunch of chemicals that you put into the atmosphere, lower the temperature during, I don't know how many weeks or months, that that could be a solution at some point. But, right, we all know that it isn't. And so when we think about the complexity and the ambiguity of the solution, and right, we were talking about before this dichotomy, if you will, about nature versus technology. And I find it so interesting in a way, and a bit paradoxical in a sense also, because right, we especially in sustainability circles, we try to remind ourselves that we humans are part of nature. At the same time, what we do, what is man-made, isn't part of nature, right? We go and play with the rhythms of nature. And so the question is, are we able to intervene in the system in a way that is non-disruptive? And so also there, I guess, right, there are good examples in history, there are bad examples in history. Nuclear is another interesting example, right? Technology isn't good or bad per se, it's what we make of it that can lead us to a future that is constructive and a better future for everyone. If you think about the ozone layer, that is also another example, quite different actually to climate change, but still that we were able to adjust our destructive capitalistic system, if you will, was able to recognize the problem and make a change. And so similarly, if I look at what many startups are trying to do today to contribute to the system, I find it a good try, at least, right? I think it's commendable. And if we're able to find solutions that are contributing to these very specific issues of high concentrations of CO2 in the atmosphere, that will already be a win. Now, it is a carbon tunnel vision. I agree with that 100%. And I wish that more people like myself were able to dedicate themselves to actually creating healthy ecosystems that are regenerative by design, right? Truth is, however, I feel like that we are too far along the line at this point. And so in a way, we have to, as a society, move forward step by step. And so I hope that maybe my children, one day, will be able to really tackle and say and work on a daily basis, hey, this capitalistic system is not working. This solution we have to test.
There's almost, I mean, the world is so big. There are so many ideas. There's always room to explore new possibilities, some we never thought of. I think just today, sometimes the danger is that, you know, there, I often feel, because of the complexity of this world and the planet, you know, people, they're still in this go global thinking, you know, we're going to solve it globally, we're going to discuss it globally. And I think rather than breaking it down and saying, okay, nationally, especially on local levels, you know, starting, you know, there where you can actually feel the earth, touch and build and create and restructure exactly what is going to affect you, that would be, in my opinion, often something that you could move along a lot faster. And also, I find with all these solutions that are presented out there, you know, there are just some solutions we know, or some things we know work, which is like, if you regenerate earth actively, there will never be a downside to it, you know, like regenerating like ecosystems and regenerating and restoring earth and protecting earth, that will never have a downside, and it will only ever make our thriving and living on this planet better and more safe for humans and non-humans. But then today, I think some people or some entities, especially those in power who profit off of this destruction, there's this turn towards saying, we're going to put barriers in the way of everybody who is trying this regeneration, reconnection, because it's going to, you know, affect us negatively in our work, in our destruction of the planet that we profit of, and would not even, you know, putting barriers in the ways of others and not helping or contributing there, they turn around and say, you know, we have solutions for you that we want to present to you, and we want you to take our solutions, which are often like really insane solutions that take so much more actually, you know, like expertise, money, time, incredible resources, not just, you know, from what people have to think up and create to make these well, quote unquote, solutions happen, that it's like what you mentioned, solar geoengineering or other things that are so complex and so resource intensive to even create, rather than those like companies or governments saying, we're going to start with the things we actually know and can do, like upforesting, like protecting our oceans, like putting different policies in place. And I think it's crazy how they, in order to avoid this route of actual regeneration, come up with something and say, we're not going to do all of this. We're not going to plant trees. We're not going to protect swamps, but we're going to turn around and build some sort of crazy space shuttle or put something in front of the sun. I think this is just a crazy thing to think about, how they try to avoid this, let's say, these simple ways of regeneration we know works, this reconnection to Earth. And then putting in so much energy and time and money into these solutions that are so crazy that nobody even knows if they will even have more negative impacts in the long run than actually solving some of the problems we're having right now. So what's maybe your stance on that?
Well, I'd actually like to ask you first, why do you think that is? Why are these people taking these decisions?
Well, I think because they want to avoid, first of all, I think they want to be the ones who profit off those solutions they're presenting. Like, because it's someone said once, I think, about Elon Musk, like Elon Musk wants to, save the planet, but only if he's the one profiting of it, which, first of all, in my opinion, he's not saving the planet, he's destroying it. But that's a different discussion. For me, I think it's more because these entities, these alleged solutions they're proposing, they want to profit of it and they want to be in control. If they present the solution, it will be in their hands, in their control.
Yeah, right. So in my mind, in a certain way, there is an inherent violence almost to it, right? I mean, like you're saying, there is this control element to it. We might gotta make a profit out of it, but also because, right, in a way, it's the easy choice. It's so easy today to say, let's try this new technology, let's build a new building, let's do this and that, instead of, like you're saying, reconnecting to place, to earth, and try this new approach to living, right? But the thing is, right, and I'm also very interested in it, and I try to dedicate some time, right, of, right, what did the Celts do, for example, on in Europe before Christianity happened, really? How did they connect to the land and to the place, and how did communities function back then? But that, right, those questions and those approaches to living life and being in community and living in community seem so foreign nowadays from the mainstream. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, they do
Yeah.
seem foreign,
Yeah.
but I do see a lot of people. I do see a big rift of some people separating from that even further and from everything that has to do with things you can touch and feel and actually see. And people, another group of people leaning more into, going off grid, exiting the
Yeah.
matrix, homesteading, etc.
And so ultimately, it becomes a question, where are we going as societies ultimately? Because ultimately, right, the main drivers of the humans will be to survive, to live a good life, to have a healthy family, right, to reach your goals, whatever there is. And the way that this is then reached, it becomes secondary in a certain sense, right? And so the question then becomes, if we want a regeneration revolution, how do we make this lifestyle in a way core to the belief system of today's society?
That absolutely, and that is a huge question.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is that we do not have the time simply for enough people to realize that. I see that in my own town, you know, you have so many, if you're one of those people who wants that reconnection to nature, because there's no arguing yourself around that is better for all of us, whether we want to realize it or not. It's just a fact that is indisputable. Because, you know, simply the fact that we are on this earth, you know, there's no other place for us to go. This is what we originated from. This is where everything we are is rooted in. So there is no better way for us to live than to be connected to earth. But I think, you know, the first of all, you and me, we will sadly not come to a conclusion to how we will reach that.
No.
But I think something beautiful would be to spark excitement in people for this, to make many people realize again, that this reconnection to nature, you know, you start it step by step, and everybody comes there on their own terms. Possibly for everybody, there will be a different spark, for them to say, I want to start this journey, I want to reconnect, I want to be more conscious. And that is a gradual process. But I think, you know, the different mechanisms that are in place now, we have to be very careful to not lead people because of lack of consciousness, lack of connection, lack of knowledge, to lead, you know, a lot of the world into this one big trap of easy solutions. Of also what you mentioned, ambiguity is very important in this respect, the quality of being open to more than one interpretation, because I think people like to slap a stamp on something today very
Absolutely.
quickly, be very quick to judge and very quick to present solutions or problems, where it takes a lot more time to connect deeply to a topic, to consider different angles. So I want to know also, what for you is the importance of this ambiguity? What does it mean to you, in today's context, let's say relating to the climate crisis, biodiversity crisis, etc.?
How many billion people are we on the planet now? Eight,
I
right?
think almost, yeah, I think around
Yeah,
eight.
and so right, there will be 8 billion ways of interpreting life and ways to look at life and live life. And so, whenever we are sharing experiences, food, anything, right? There will be so many sides and so many perspectives to everything that we are doing and experiencing. And so, right, the ability to share space, to listen more deeply, and to catch the nuances of these different perspectives, I find it so critical in a way, right? Because right, we are in a way also dealing with we are deciding our future, and so it is when we listen carefully to each other that we can really say and decide together, okay, this is the future we want, or rather that other future. But I think if you're not able to commit to it together, then right, it's gonna be only chaos. And then comes right the other dimension of complexity. Like you were saying today, we are now drifting away from a globalized world to a decentralized world. How do we then create those governance structure where we can still in communities decide in community how we can live together, but then right at a smaller scale, to be in balance with one another.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is also not to present these questions. Is there any ideas you personally have, or in the field that you're working in, some solutions that you've encountered, maybe especially since you started really diving into the sustainability space? anything that excites you, where you see this could be, in certain contexts, one of the helpful solutions that could be good for us to implement, or something that is even place specific to where you are?
Honestly, I don't. If I'm being very, very frank, right? Like, at least what I'm learning, what I'm hearing is that most of the things that we're doing today in our Western world are corrupt to some degree, right? Being the agriculture and everything. And that is why, also, right? I'm interested in conferences like Your 2040, where we hear about communities like the ones that Daniel Wahl is putting up, where it's based on permaculture, for example. But frankly speaking, I mean, I see a lot of intention, good intention to try to develop good solutions, to listen. But from what I'm understanding from all this conversation is only that an indigenous way of life is the sustainable option, which I'm not really seeing nowadays. Maybe there's what's it called, the eco village in France with the monks.
Yeah,
I
I know there are many eco villages popping up all over the world. I actually like that you said you're seeing none, no real
Yeah.
like solutions. I like that. Thank you for the honesty, because I think that gives way to an honest conversation about, yes, exactly. That's what I often think. Like, my dream would be also that, like, in my town, you know, that we have community gardens and do permaculture, and everybody rides their bike instead of a car, or does car sharing, and that we have free public transportation, and that the places here where people can work, you know, they're out in nature, they include, you know, making their living off of community, locally based enterprises, like, yeah, doing permaculture, farming regeneratively, like the people who have forests doing regenerative forestry, also mixed, you know, traditional indigenous knowledge with contemporary knowledge, you know, this kind of world, which is like what many people say, you know, it's in many ways very unrealistic, just because structures are already set up in ways, you know, where it's so hard to dismantle that. And if you would dismantle that tomorrow and want to create this regenerative world tomorrow, chaos would absolutely probably ensue, because you just don't have the transition or set up to get people, you know, to change their occupations, to get us to change the way we live and work. So yes, obviously in some ways it's a fantasy, and certainly 100%, if we wanted to, and if we shared this knowledge equally and looked at these real life examples of regeneration that are actually there, like sustainable forestry, like all these regenerative practices that are already there, and as you said, deeply rooted in indigenous knowledge, we could certainly, in a few centuries or even in 10 years, create impossible change that we don't even dare to dream right now. But in
Exactly.
other ways, there are forces in this world that just make this unrealistic, because they just won't let that happen. And not even big evil corporations, but also, like, let's say regular people, like maybe your neighbor. He says, you know, first of all, I don't see the urgency, and I can't imagine that world, because they are not, as you also mentioned before, they don't know regeneration, or they have never connected with this topic. So I totally think it's a dilemma. It's a huge dilemma. So what you just said, you see no solutions,
If I
yeah,
may,
is quite frank.
and I mean, right, and so that is why, because, right, like we were saying, there are actually many good examples out there. Like, for example, if I think about Baden, the town I live, there's also an association which does permaculture, but that's not what we're looking for, are we? It's really about that paradigm shift, that collective vision and understanding of how society is and works. And so that is why I actually find that efforts like your 2040 is doing are so important, right? We have to shift our minds, our understanding, and what we are looking forward to, and what we understand as regenerative practices or regenerative futures.
Moving on from these big outer, like, worldly questions, zooming in a little more to you, to the place where you are, what is your connection to nature, to earth at the moment? How do you practice that? What is something maybe about the place that you currently live in that you can share with us?
Good question. Well, I mean, I live in the town of Baden, which is quite famous for its thermal water source, which is actually a very interesting example for this podcast, now that I think about it. And that is, right, Baden has these wonderful water sources, right? And the city has recognized that. And of course, there are the private spas and everything, but there are also some public places where people can meet and bathe in the public. And so that becomes a very interesting example also again of where people meet. And so that's one way I recharge, you could say. What I also like to do now and again is to do some Tai Chi on the hills whenever time permits and I have some extra energy to try to ground myself in my thoughts and reconnect I guess a bit with my interest in Chinese philosophy. I like to go on walks, and I guess also what connects me to land and to this more of an idea of land are my summers in Sweden. My mom is Swedish, and we used to spend summer up there outside in nature. And there, it's so simple, right? It's just so raw, and it's so green, and there are the beautiful lakes and the big rocks, and you imagine trolls that are just behind the corner, and you listen to maybe a Swedish Norse mythology podcast, and that is something that we could integrate much more into our daily life.
We're all connected to nature, but do you actively in your everyday life, do you feel this, you know, would you like to work with nature more? What is for your daily life? Are there things you want to learn, like practical skills, or when you're out in nature, you know, do you have a deep feeling of connectedness, or are there different things you're still working on for your personal life to, you know, to deepen that connection?
I feel like I should say, yes, absolutely, I am, daily basis. Like I take walk in nature, I recharge myself in nature. I have to admit, it's hard for me to imagine myself working in nature.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting, because from the thing you mentioned before, you know, for some people, it's like this would be their dream, you know, this would be the most wonderful thing, but not everybody wants to work out in nature every day and, I don't know, chop wood or, I don't know, collect herbs and berries. You know, this is for some people a very whimsical, you know, dream, a story they have in their head of what would be the solution now. But I think the reality is that for many people, and also for myself, that's something very far away and something often maybe we paint in our mind, but that in reality, if practiced, would look very differently. You know, it's not like life out in nature is all dreamy and sunshine floating through the treetops. It's you know, it's rough, it's dirty, you know, it's also death and rebirth. I think nature or let's say the earth. I'm sometimes not even sure I like the word nature anymore, but earth, I think something is, since many of us are not witnessing the actual goings on and dynamics that happen every day out, in the wilderness, we don't really actually imagine the reality of it. So I think that's also something interesting today, because you see so many people also on social media, sharing their lives off grid and milking their goats, and many people then think, oh great, this is what I want to do. But to really think about, how will we create these structures for us as we are now, with our history, with our predispositions, with, let's say, these patterns that we've evolved into over the last few hundred years, the things that we're used to, how do we still integrate that? So it's not like this total jump into the cold water of saying we're going from office-based lives and shopping in grocery stores to sitting in circle and doing permaculture together with our neighbors. I think we should also be a bit more realistic about it, although in our quest to reach this regenerative world, and also I find myself doing this, we're already imagining this world as complete, whereas that's just not, realistic, and actually something that we need certain steps to transform. We can't just create that world in our head or paint a picture of it and then jump into it. So, I think this is an interesting conversation to be had. What's your opinion on that?
I agree. It's romanticized, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Like most things, and like we were saying before, right? It's this depth of imagination in a sense, and also that if I think about the future, and right, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and so I totally hope that there will be Jedis in the future sometime. But this is a sci-fi future, right? It's a dystopian future where there's technology everywhere. It's very hard just to grasp, okay, what does that mean actually? If you want to reach this regenerative future, what does that mean? How does that look like? What does it smell like really? For it ultimately to have that impact, that sustainable impact on our ecosystem that we wish, right? That we didn't have that, that we weren't the cause of so much suffering, actually. Then, if you think again on more of a practical aspect, could it be more gardening at homes? Could we have more tech-enabled gardening in all the apartments? And live in these dystopian apartments that we see today in magazines, right? That there is more, there's interconnection between man-made technology and nature. Could we create computers that talk with trees? Could that be a desirable future? That'd be really interesting, right? If you think about also the elves in Lord of the Rings, for example, right? They make trees grow, and could we be doing something like that? It could that be maybe an interesting pathway to explore? Because in a lot of way, in a lot of senses, right, we hear a lot about biomimicry as well. And right, if you think about human development and this how to say this urge to keep innovating, doing new things, I think. Yeah, maybe. Why not?
Ultimately, I think it's also the question of how will this regenerative future, or something that would make more sense if we would ask ourselves this more often, how does this regenerative future look like here, place-based? Like, how does it look in my home, in my town, within my community? Because I think this is so much easier and much more accessible to think about and then to imagine than to say, how does the regenerative future of the world look like? Because as we always, as many people in this, like, let's say, deep ecology, regenerative space stress, is that regeneration will look radically different everywhere. And so I think we have to get away from this global look down at the world and imagine this one regenerative world, I think a general paradigm shift will be immensely helpful. A general shift in values and in knowledge, and a big re and unlearning. But generally, to ask ourselves, what will regeneration look like here, where I am today, in my small town, in my home, in my garden, even, like you said. So I think sometimes zooming in much more would be extremely helpful because it just gives you a better oversight of what's in front of you. And then I think you can imagine much better and are possibly also a lot more realistic. What you're doing now, do you feel this makes sense and this can be part of the circularity, this true, genuine circularity we want to achieve?
A valid step, a valid attempt in the right direction. I'm very grateful of being part of this, I have to say, because for once at least it's shaking the system and the system is participating, right? So that is already an improvement compared to, so from that point of view it's right, it's working with the status quo and trying to close these circles. It's not even far from enough of where we need to be, but it can be the first agitation of something bigger to come.
Yeah, interesting. I liked what you said, shaking the system and the system is participating. I think that's a very interesting way to put it. And I think also, you know, even some of these solutions where people say these are not complete, and as we know, there is not one solution. But these solutions, it's not like even if they work in the status quo and they make an improvement, that's really nice. But then, even if people say, okay, but this is not regeneration, yet these solutions or particles of solutions can still be translated and then brought into this regenerative future that we're imagining. You know, I think not everybody that everything that we may think now is not yet complete must be abandoned. But there are certain elements, I think, of a lot of things that you can reimagine and shape. Regarding to how times and needs change.
And this is gonna sound like a cliche, absolutely, but right, what how does it go? The way is not the goal, the goal is the way, right? That we as a society are able to embark onto this journey together, because we don't know the solution, no one has it. Acknowledging that and going on that journey of trying, answering, right? Holding the questions, like Daniel says, living the questions together. And the more people can participate in that, the closer we'll get to an answer.
Or maybe even many answers.
Yeah,
But I think for
absolutely. Yeah.
myself, yeah, I think for myself, I don't know if you agree, because I think even if you and me drew up regenerative futures, they would look very different.
Yes.
Then it's like for me, the only like real thing, the only thing you can always count on that is always right and good, to say it in broad terms, although sometimes language in describing something like that fails us a bit, is that, you know, working with the rhythms of nature, with the rhythms of earth, you know, being kind to one another, being open, as you said, asking questions, sharing, and continuing to strive to merge our lives and merge ourselves with Earth again. I think you can never ever go wrong with that. I think that's the only thing that is always true and real. And I would really like to see the world focus on that, what we know, what is just a clear and simple fact, instead of putting our heads in the cloud up in all the way into space and saying we're going to search for some solution up there and ignore the one that is right in front of our face. Also, I want to acknowledge and honor Indigenous and First Nations peoples as custodians of most of planet Earth's biodiversity and bearers of ancient knowledge. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize all Indigenous and First Nations people's strength, resilience, and deep connection to nature. Thank you.